Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com and this is Joel Friedlander. Joel has worked in various aspects of publishing for more than 30 years and helped people publish their books through his company Marin Bookworks and also his amazing blog thebookdesigner.com. Joel has a great new book out, A Self-Publisher's Companion, which we're discussing today, and as Joel designed my own novel Pentecost, I can personally recommend him. So welcome, Joel.
Well, thank you, Joanna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you back on the show. So we've had some pretty big news in the last week, if people are, you know, listening sort of, you know, recently. Barry Eisler has gone from traditional to indie, and Amanda Hocking has gone indie to mainstream. So it's a crazy time, yeah. So what do you think about that? And tell us a bit about how your book can help people.
Well, it's, you know, this has been coming for quite a while. We've been watching these signs for the last year or two, and we've seen people moving and loosening up and starting to think about it, and they're all reading Joe Conrath's blog. And, you know, it's not surprising to me because we know that the leverage in independent publishing is just phenomenal compared to traditional publishing, the financial leverage. You know, the big publishers have the distribution networks, which we don't have, but we've got tremendous financial leverage in that we don't have to settle for such a small royalty and be beholden to the publisher for all the decisions on how to publish the book, what it should look like, what it should cost, what it should be called, all of those things. So, yeah, I think it was pretty inevitable, but I have to tell you, for somebody who's been doing this for a very long time, I started self-publishing in the 1980s when we were hiding all the time. You had to hide who you were and what you were doing, and you would go take a post office box in the next town so you didn't have to have an address in the same place as the author, and all of these subterfuges were common. And it's pretty exciting, Joanna, I have to say, to see indie publishing kind of coming into its own.
And so your book is called A Self-Publisher's Companion, which I really like because it's kind of the thing that you can have with you on your journey. So maybe you could just give us a brief outline of the book.
I'd be happy to, Joanna. You know, I wrote the book. Sorry about that. I wrote the book. I gathered the book together with a very specific intent. I didn't include anything on like how to lay out pages or what type fonts to use or where to get an ISBN. I didn't want to deal with any of that. I really wanted to write a book that would kind of introduce self-publishing, indie publishing, to people who were wondering what the heck is going on over there with all those book people, and also to give newcomers some idea of the kind of activities they would be involved in, how they would produce their books, how they would market the books, what's involved in putting books together. And so I called it a companion for the same, for that exact reason, that, you know, this is something, it's almost like having a mentor by your side to help out, explain the overview of the industry. The longest section in the book is the first section. It's called A Self-Publishing Orientation. And that's where a lot of the meat of the book about what's going on in self-publishing and independent publishing right now. And, you know, I have to say, I didn't know how it would work. And you're very familiar with this, having just launched your own book. You don't know, and no matter how much testing you do beforehand. And so far, the response has been very gratifying.
No, absolutely. So I'm really interested because you, I mean, you've been in publishing a long time. You love typography and you love design, and you, and there are patches in the book that are very passionate about beauty, you know, in print. And then you've also got the digital publishing side, the ebook side. How do you reconcile that? And how do other people who, you know, the I love books, you know, type of people, how do people reconcile these two aspects?
Well, there are a lot of us, you know, who are print book junkies. I mean, we just love printed books, and we love the feel of them, the smell, the typography, the paper, and the ink. You know, when you get that new book and it still smells like it came out of the print shop, I mean, that's very exciting. And it's very, it's been disappointing to see that the e-books, which are becoming very popular, are really quite primitive compared to a print book. But I'm an optimist, Joanna, and that's what saves me, because I know that we're going to continue to get better tools to create these ebooks. Right now, there's no comparison. You know, we're just packaging the text and throwing it into like an HTML box and giving it to people. And certainly, people, the ebooks are becoming very popular because they're cheap, they're convenient. You've got a Kindle, you know, you just have that idea, gee, I'd like to read that book, and a minute later you're reading the book. You can't really fight that. And price also, if you can go into the Kindle store and get 10 books for $10, hey, that's pretty impressive. So I like the convenience of ebooks, and I like the fact that they're inexpensive and people are reading more and buying more books, and I think that's all a good thing, and I think that gradually the software will come along just the way websites did. If you remember the internet years ago, it was very primitive. We didn't have any of the fancy kind of websites or WordPress or blogs. 10 years ago, it was very similar to what you're looking at now in ebooks. So I think that in a few years, ebooks are going to look a lot better.
Hmm. Yeah. And I guess, as you say, it will become easier and easier to use, because I get a lot of questions every day, you know, about how do I best do formatting? And I mean, you know, it is just hard at the moment, isn't it?
It's awkward. It's confusing. It's, you know, there's different formats. I just, when I had my book formatted by Joshua Talon at ebookarchitects.com, you know, he actually sent me three different formats, you know, one specifically for Apple and one for all the other EPUB people and one for Kindle. That's kind of crazy. We're back in the Betamax versus VHS era, and that's bad for book buyers, in my opinion. You know, I think that eventually, I hope that the industry moves to a standard format so we can start working on things that really matter to readers, like, is it easy to read? You know, does it look good? I mean, I'd like these ebooks to look more like the printed books, not exactly the same, but to have some, you know, that there's something familiar about the book when you go from one form to another. And we can't do that right now, but we will be doing it soon.
No, I totally agree. Okay, so let's talk about your experience. I mean, you've worked with a lot of self-publishers over the years. So what is sort of the number one thing that people get wrong about it, and how can they prevent the mistake?
Well, most self-publishers are enthusiasts. They're passionate about something, and that's what moves them to publish. Now, that's a good thing, because we need people's passion, and that's one of the reasons I love self-publishing, because it allows people to put their passion into the world. And but the downside of that is that people get very emotionally connected to the book and the object of the book itself. And so I would say the chief mistake that new self-publishers make is not approaching publishing as a business. In other words, most books, really, you should take up the marketing problems of the book well before the book is ever published. You know, you have to know what kind of cover to put on the book to appeal to the market that you think is going to buy the book. In some cases, in nonfiction, the content has to be tailored to the right group. You have to know where you're going to find those people, and that means how are you going to sell the book. So all of these marketing decisions really ought to be made before the book is even finished or written. And that's, you know, the most common thing I get from self-publishers, Joanna, is, I just published my book. What do I do now to sell it? I say, well, you should have asked me that a year ago.
That's a very good point. And, you know, well, you know my story, but that's exactly why I started my blog nearly 3 years ago now, when I had a book out that I'd self-published and nobody bought it. And it was devastating. And I compare that to Pentecost that we worked on together, which sold pretty well. So so let's talk about some of those ways that people can sell their books, because you personally have done some of these great marketing things. So what are the most effective forms of marketing that you've found?
Well, you know, my basic strategy has been blogging. You know, I'm a kind of a demon blogger, and I just love blogging. And but like you, I've been building a platform. You know, and when, by writing about the subjects that I was going to publish about, and I've been doing this since 2009, you know, over the time, it takes a while to build up a community or a following or fans or people who are just interested in the kind of stuff that I'm publishing. And so the biggest thing that I've done is blogging and networking. And I think part of the reason I'm very optimistic about the launch of my book, The Self-Publisher's Companion, is because the tremendous support I'm getting from people in my community. You know, you and other bloggers and other writers, and it's just terrific. But I wouldn't have that if I hadn't been doing all this blogging and networking for the last year and a half. So that's really the biggest thing. That and, you know, connecting to people on Twitter has been fantastic for me.
Absolutely. And you blog every day, don't you?
I do, Joanna. I'm not going to lie about it. I blog every single day, although I run guest posts, which I enjoy doing. But, you know, when I started blogging, my wife said to me, "Joel, nobody wants to read about typefaces 5 days a week." And I said, "Okay, honey, I'm going to do it 7 days a week." Because, you know, that's just the way I am. But I've been, you know, gradually I've branched out. I want to talk more to the reader, the writing community, the book marketing community, rather than just the actual physical construction of books. And that's been very very gratifying to find readers there. So I think anybody who wants to blog, I've just been doing courses on blogging lately. And I emphasize to people, you don't have to blog every day. You can blog once a week or twice a month. You set the schedule, you know, and if you think about it, you have monthly magazines maybe you really look forward to. If you came out with a great blog article once a month, you know, eventually you'd find you had a big group of people who were just waiting to get it. So, you know, you can set your own pace with blogging, I think. But I really enjoy it. I like the meeting people, communicating, and that's very effective for me.
Yeah, no, we've both found that, you know, for our businesses. So just going back to your book then, because we could talk about marketing forever, but we're meant to be talking about your book, although it does contain stuff on marketing, we should say that.
That's right.
Some of the other stuff in there, that I guess I felt it was a lot about the psychology of being a self-publisher almost. So we've talked about, you know, being a business, being, you know, taking it in a professional manner. What are some of the other aspects of psychology around self-publishing?
Well, you know, I found that, you know, there are these typical things that people come to me with when they bring me their book and they want to talk about publishing or they're consulting or they want to get a book design or whatever it is that they want. And this problem of, like, not being business-like, I think that's a psychological problem, like to be able to divorce yourself from the book object and to see it as a product of your company. You know, this requires you to change hats, to go from being a complete creative, a writer, and then to switch over to being a business person. The other thing that a lot of people are hesitant about is social media. And in the section of my book on marketing, which is called You Are the Market, I'm talking almost exclusively about social media, online marketing. There's virtually nothing in my book about offline marketing. And that was very intentional because I think that's really where marketing is for indie authors right now. And one of the other problems people have is that they're very focused on the offline areas, like they want to see their book on the shelf in the bookstore. And for a lot of people, that's why they're writing. You know, they want that. They want to, and then I have to tell them, well, you know, if we do this the way I'm going to propose we do it, you're never going to see your book on the shelf of a bookstore. And that's very crushing psychologically for some people to get over that. And to understand that, you know, it's they're only ever going to see a little tiny, that's the bookshelf. It's going to be that big and it's going to be on Amazon. And, you know, I've had that experience when I first self-published. I was, of course, in a lot of bookstores. But these days, it's unlikely. It's a whole different thing. I mean, you have to have a big, you have to have a much bigger budget and more people to help you and a lot more distribution if you want to try and launch a book that way. Because in the United States, it's really a national campaign. And that's what the whole bookstore distribution system is set up, only for national distribution books.
Mm.
And it's not something that a self-publisher can do very easily.
Mm. So what, I guess we should just, you know, go back to very basics. Maybe you could just explain what print-on-demand is for those people who might not understand it.
Print-on-demand has changed the publishing business radically.
Yay!
It's so exciting. And, you know, we used to print books only by offset printing, and to get a good unit price so you could make money on the book, you had to buy 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 books. And this created a real hurdle for people to get over to get their book published. And I certainly did that. I printed 2,000 or 3,000 copies of my book in the 80s when I first published it. And I had to come up with quite a bit of money to do that. And print-on-demand, of course, the beauty of print-on-demand is that every book is paid for before it's printed, and it's paid for by the buyer. And so because we use basically copiers to print these books, very nice copiers, you know, we're able to print one book at a time, which we could never do before. But the big thing is that it's eliminated risk on the part of the publisher. You or I can publish a book, send it to a print-on-demand supplier, and really we haven't spent very much money and we've spent nothing on inventory. So we're running a product-oriented business with no inventory. And that's incredible to be able to do that.
Yeah. And just so people are clear, because I think at the moment people are getting confused that self-publishing means ebook publishing, but it doesn't. What we're saying is you can still have your print book and people can buy it on Amazon. It's just it's only printed when they buy it on Amazon. And that's true for my book, Pentecost, and it's true for your book, The Self-Publisher's Companion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
On print on demand. And it also allows you to do other things. Like, for instance, I had a book I published many years ago, and I had let it go out of print. And so I saw that people were buying and selling used copies. In fact, they were charging like $75 for these used books. And I got a little irritated about that, Joanna, because I thought, well, I'm not getting any of that money, and that's my work, my book. I printed it, I published it, and everything. So I took that old book, and I put it with a print-on-demand supplier.
Mm-hmm.
And now the book will never go out of print ever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredible if you think about it. And I don't have to do anything. And every month I get a check. It doesn't sell very well, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Every month I get a check, and I'm just very happy about print-on-demand every month.
Yeah, me too. It's great. So I think that's really important for people to remember. They can have a print book on the biggest bookstore in the world, which is Amazon.com.
Recommend people do their print books first.
Mm.
You know, because the print book, because it's more difficult, you have to make sure everything fits. You have to get all your corrections in.
Mm.
It's a really good way to get your book to a final form, because once you finalize it and you've crossed the last T and dotted the last I and the whole file is completely finished and ready to go to press, then that's the file that we then take and use for the ebook conversion, because we know that it's done. So it's a really good workflow, and that's working really well for a lot of my clients. And we just pretend it's a print book right up to the end, and then we convert it.
Yeah. Exactly. So what should people do themselves, and what should they employ professionals to do, in your opinion? Since you are one.
that's very true. But, you know, I'm a big fan of do-it-yourself publishers, and I try to help them in every way I can to make better books. Having said that, it really, you have to decide, and this goes back to what I was talking about, making marketing decisions way, way, way early in the process. Like, if you've determined that your book is going to be only marketed to a small group of people online who already love your stuff, you know, maybe you could just do it yourself and do it in Word, and you know, you'll be fine. If, on the other hand, you think that your book is going to be of interest to corporate buyers or people who you know, need to have a, you know, expect the book to look good, or it has to compete against other books that are from big publishers, then you need to hire in professionals, because otherwise your book will suffer in comparison. And that's the whole deal, Joanna. I don't think there's any other reason, unless you just love typography, you know, to do it. I mean, if you need to put a professional book in front of buyers, then you're going to have to hire professionals, because that's the only way you're going to get a book that looks professional. I mean, sad to say, but if you want a professional-looking book, you need professionals to do it, and there's just no replacement for that. Now, I know people who've been able to produce incredible-looking books themselves, but their investment was years of work and study, and they're kind of like semi-pro now. They're, you know, they're kind of half professionals anyway. So if you don't want to devote that kind of time to learning about typography, page layout, editing, proofreading, book construction, you know, it's much more efficient to hire somebody and get it done right.
We should also say that people can space that out. So for my book cover for Pentecost, we did that maybe 4 months before we then did the print book cover, because I wanted to market, you know, start marketing the cover and all that kind of thing. So people don't have to do everything at once, do they?
Not at all. And in fact, I would encourage anybody who wants to publish competitively, as you did with Pentecost, to do the cover as early in the process as possible. And it doesn't even matter if you end up eventually adjusting it, changing it a little bit. That's not important. But creating that cover really, really early really helps to focus people on the book as a product. You know, that this is going to become like a consumer product, a retail product, and that's what you're going to be. You're going to be a manufacturer. And it helps to position the book in its genre and to focus you on how you're going to market the book. And it just brings together all those ideas very early in the process. So I thought you were really smart to do that, John.
Thank you. And also, I should say another exciting thing about it is when, so I'm writing the next one at the moment, Prophecy, and when I've got, you know, a decent edited first chapter, I'm going to be reloading my ebook and possibly even the print book with the new chapter in the back, so that people can actually change the files, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. There's no reason not to. You know, and everybody does it, and it's great for print-on-demand, and it's great for ebooks, because print-on-demand, you just upload a new file. You might have a few days while they get it into their system, and then you just keep going. And ebooks are probably even easier, and I love the idea of your series book to have the ad for the next book in the series at the back of the book, because when I finished reading Pentecost, I wanted to keep reading. I love the story and the characters, and I wanted to see, well, what happens now? So I would have been one of those people, John. I would have pushed that button right then and ordered the next book in the series right away. So it's a great marketing move, too.
And we're seeing that in the Kindle store. The top sellers are the people who have a series, where people buy and buy the next one. So very exciting times for publishers. Okay, so we're out of time. Where can people find your book?
Well, it's on Amazon, in the bookstore, in the Kindle store, and on barnesandnoble.com. If you want to get more information or have links to those pages, the best thing to do is to come by my blog. There's a big ad on the top of my blogs as of today, and that is at www.thebookdesigner.com.
Brilliant. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Joel. That was great.
It's lovely, Joanna. Thank you.